Hello, this is your Polycast for Monday, July 25th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, amid turmoil and division, Democrats begin their national convention. Delegates to the Democratic National Convention arrived in Philadelphia to news that DNC Chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz is resigning. The Florida congresswoman decided to step down following email leaks that show party leaders conspired to derail Bernie Sanders' campaign. Mark Zdechlik reports.
Long before the leaked emails, many Sanders supporters questioned whether the Democratic establishment was working against Sanders.
We sort of had a feeling it was going on, but it is good to see the evidence.
That's Asad Zaman, a delegate from Invergrove Heights.
I'm glad she resigned. She needed to resign. And what people are upset about is why it took her so long to resign.
Another Sanders delegate said the resignation is a positive sign that the DNC is taking responsibility for trying to undercut Sanders' campaign. Mark Zdechlik, Minnesota Public Radio News, Philadelphia.
And as Democrats begin their national convention in Philadelphia, most Minnesota delegates are pledged to vote for Bernie Sanders, not Hillary Clinton, on the first ballot. The delegation reflects the results of precinct caucuses back in March when Sanders scored a decisive win over Clinton. Party leaders are now stressing the need for unity, and this week will test whether Clinton can excite Sanders supporters when she officially claims the Democratic nomination. Take, for example, Ashley Fairbanks of Minneapolis. She says she's been a political nerd since age 13 and has worked on a lot of campaigns, but this is the 29-year-old artist and community organizer's first national convention. Fairbanks is a Sanders delegate who says she will have a hard time supporting Clinton.
I think I feel more comfortable identifying as a never Trump than a pro Hillary. I will support her getting elected if she is the candidate, which she will be, right? So, but I just have a hard time identifying as a strong Hillary Clinton supporter.
Fairbanks says she thinks Clinton is too hawkish and that she hasn't connected with young voters. She also feels that Clinton supporters too often have talked down to Sanders supporters during the campaign. She thinks it could make for some uncomfortable moments at the convention.
It's hard to have a peaceful relationship and coexist with people who think that you're stupid or think that you're naive. I hope that we can make some progress on that. I hope that we can find some common ground.
Tim Pugmire picks up the story from there.
Second-time Clinton delegate Claudia Cody knows how Sanders supporters feel. Cody, a small business owner from Maplewood, was a Clinton delegate in 2008 when Barack Obama won the Democratic nomination. It was a big letdown for Cody that year, but she moved on and supported the nominee. She's now urging Sanders supporters to do the same.
When we focus on unity and coming together and understanding what we're in it for, and we're all Democrats, and moving that platform forward, that's what it really matters.
Another Clinton delegate doesn't think unification will come easily.
Oh, it's going to be a circus.
Michael Arulfo of Bloomington is solidly behind Clinton and believes in having a unified party. But he knows a lot of Sanders supporters personally, including many delegates. Arulfo says he expects Sanders people to make their voices heard on several issues.
I think it's going to be necessary. Now, I think it's just a healthy part of the whole unification process. You know, I'm not saying, you know, there's going to be like crazy disruption. I don't think it's going to be that, and I hope it's not going to come to that.
One issue Sanders delegates are expected to push for is the elimination of the party's unelected superdelegate system. DFL activists passed a resolution at their state convention supporting such a change. Minnesota has 16 superdelegates, all of whom are party leaders or top elected officials. Despite the state caucus results, almost all of them back Clinton. John Benson, a Sanders delegate and former state legislator from Minnetonka, says he wants to see the superdelegate system reformed.
At this point, I think we're beyond trying to do anything retroactively, but I do think we ought to think about the future and change those processes.
Despite the lingering differences, Minnesota DFL Chair Ken Martin is confident delegates will leave the national convention unified and motivated to help Clinton defeat Republican Donald Trump in November. He notes that Sanders already had a big influence on shaping the party platform. Martin, who's a superdelegate supporting Clinton, says he expects Sanders delegates to express their views in Philadelphia and keep fighting for their issues moving forward.
It's important for our party to have that debate. I've always said it's a healthy debate that we want in this party, and I'm going to be working right alongside them to make sure that their voices are heard.
The Minnesota contingent has a lot of voices. In addition to those 16 superdelegates, there are 77 pledged delegates who were elected by party members at congressional district or state conventions. Covering politics, I'm Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News.
I had a technical problem on Friday and couldn't get the podcast out. That means I had to pass up this story, but it's worth revisiting. It was the last story from the Republican convention in Cleveland. And the question is, can Donald Trump win Minnesota? Brian Back spent last week asking Minnesota delegates about that, and here's what he found.
Donald Trump told cheering convention delegates that he will continue to confound expectations and that his unlikely campaign won't stop until he reaches the White House.
My sole and exclusive mission is to go to work for our country, to go to work for you. It's time to deliver a victory for the American people. We don't win anymore, but we are going to start winning again.
Trump's team has gone so far to suggest Minnesota is one of the blue states they will try to put in play come November. But there's been scant evidence of the kind of campaign presence he would need to pull it off in a place with such an unrivaled reputation for Republican futility. Some diehard Republicans, the kind that made their way to this week's convention, say there's still time. They argue the conditions seem better than ever for a surprise. Trump, they say, isn't your typical Republican. And Democratic rival Hillary Clinton has some work to do with a party base that delivered a humbling defeat in the March caucus.
Minnesota is such a bizarre state, but the fact that it went for Bernie Sanders speaks that even the Democrats, a lot of them don't like Hillary. And I think Trump could win Minnesota. I hope that they put some money into Minnesota. I mean, it's going to take that.
That's Maple Grove delegate Marjorie Holston. It's important to note that even she's still coming to grips with Trump as the nominee after doubting his conservative credentials and favoring Texas Senator Ted Cruz in the race. Another original Cruz backer, Becky Hall of Duluth, is rallying behind Trump now. The stay-at-home mom has ties to and friends in the blue-collar Iron Range. The northeastern corner of Minnesota is as reliable for Democrats as the Twin Cities core. But Hall thinks Trump's stand against foreign trade deals, his pro-gun stance, and his tough talk on national security has cracked a door open.
But the average working class person up there, they want jobs, they want to feel safe in their communities, and they feel like Donald Trump speaks that language, what they're talking about in their communities.
Hall readily admits that Trump has more to do to close the deal in the region. Her advice? Show up and ask for their votes.
I would like to see Donald Trump come to Minnesota, not to the metro area. I would love to see him go up to the Iron Range because there are people up there who maybe weren't so vocal, kind of kept their opinions to themselves. There are people talking about him up there.
Pat Anderson came to Cleveland as a Marco Rubio delegate, but is fine with Trump. The former Minnesota state auditor calls Trump a moderate who doesn't dwell on social issues that turn off many Democrats and some independents. Anderson says the more he sticks to that recipe, the better chance he'll have to attract converts.
Minnesota voters tend to be, you know, rebellious, and we look for candidates that are a little out of the box, anti-Washington, anti-establishment, and I think that you have that in Donald Trump.
DFL Party Chairman Ken Martin says he wouldn't be shocked to see a close race, nationally or in Minnesota.
I don't think anyone in Minnesota who lived through the 1998 election should be dismissive of Donald Trump. And we certainly see on a daily basis things that would make you think disqualify him as a major candidate for president. But every step of the way, he's proven us wrong.
There are some in the Republican delegation who openly admit it would be a lost cause for Trump to devote much effort to Minnesota when other pivotal states are in reach. Jim Carson, a Cruz delegate from White Bear Lake, is in that camp.
Let's put it this way. If he wins Minnesota, it's going to be the worst washout since, Reagan. So, since 84. No, he's going to lose Minnesota.
That year, Minnesota was the only state to go for native son Democrat Walter Mondale. Even Anderson, who is bullish on Trump's chances overall, is hedging her bets on Minnesota.
If you had money to put on it, would you put it on him winning, or would you kind of think that maybe that's too risky of a bet?
Winning Minnesota? I'd put a little bit of money on him winning Minnesota. I would put a ton of money on him winning this general election.
Covering politics, I'm Brian Baxt, Minnesota Public Radio News, Cleveland.
And finally today, a new group has formed in the state to give conservatives a voice on energy policy. And their rhetoric differs from some of what speakers at the Republican convention said about energy last week. Elizabeth Dunbar reports.
Republican National Convention delegates wearing hard hats went wild last week when Donald Trump's running mate, Mike Pence, said this.
Donald Trump digs coal.
But many conservatives say a strong focus on protecting coal isn't giving Republicans enough opportunities to weigh in on the country's energy future.
Let's get away from the standard talking points for Republicans that focus on one area of energy production.
Amy Koch is a former state senator who served as majority leader when Republicans controlled the chamber earlier this decade. Koch recently joined the board of the Minnesota Conservative Energy Forum, a group that says it will push for market-driven, consumer-friendly energy policies. The group will join the Citizens League this afternoon in hosting a discussion about a growing interest among conservatives to embrace innovations that are making energy more affordable and cleaner. Koch says at first she was unsure about how the group would be received by Republicans.
This is a little bit unexpected for Republicans, let's admit that. And what I have found is that it's really not. When you talk about consumer-driven electric generation and getting the cost down, that's actually completely in our wheelhouse. It shouldn't be a surprise.
The forum's statement of principles says it embraces all forms of energy, yet acknowledges that consumers are demanding cleaner energy and that Americans want to spend part of their wealth on a clean environment. Republicans and Democrats in Minnesota came together a decade ago to boost renewable energy by implementing a renewable energy standard and by setting goals to reduce greenhouse gas emissions linked to climate change. Minnesota Republicans have since followed a national trend away from action on climate change. Forum Executive Director David Strom says the group aims to reframe the debate and get conservatives back to the table.
We just want to stay away from the whole argument over global warming, which we think is kind of a dead end. Everybody has an opinion on it. Conservatives have been sort of moving back because they feel like they're being forced to accept a position that they don't agree with. And we just want to get back to the issue of energy policy.
Pat Garofalo, the GOP chair of the Energy Committee in the Minnesota House, is one of the speakers at today's discussion. He says energy must be both clean and affordable.
Historically, we've had to spend more money to clean up our energy, and with the breakthroughs in technology, that's just simply not the case.
Coal-fired power plants throughout the country are being retired, not just because of emissions regulations, but also because they're too expensive to run, especially compared to natural gas and wind power. The cost of solar has also dropped in recent years. Those changes have led the Minnesota Environmental Quality Board to conclude that increasing the state's renewable energy standard would be the best way for Minnesota to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. A 2007 law calls for a 30% reduction by 2025, a goal the state is not currently on track to meet. Although conservatives have supported renewable energy standards in the past, the lower costs and improvements in technology should lead to different policies. That's according to Katrina Rourke, who directs energy policy at a free market libertarian think tank called R Street.
Right now, we're seeing renewable energy manifest through mandates. So it seems about time that we can allow the market to take over, and that's what conservatives want to see.
But for now, Democrats in the state don't seem to share that view. Last week, Lieutenant Governor Tina Smith told nonprofits and business groups that the state should look at increasing its renewable energy standard to 50%. Reporting on the environment, Elizabeth Dunbar, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Monday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.